Obviously, we're taking a break from our Hebrews sermon series. And when we do that, we've been working on the theme of temptations. Our Hebrews series is all about staying faithful to Jesus Christ. And so when we take a break from that, we think of things that can pull us away from Jesus. And our focus today is going to be on the lust of the eyes. Last time our temptation study was lust of the flesh. Of course, the first three to kick us off on this series comes from 1 John 2:16, which talks about in the world we'll have the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And so today it's time to think about and be warned about the lust of the eyes. And to start with, I really want us first to just think about how the eyes and seeing have played just such an important part in our personal lives, but in the history of mankind, just a general thing as part of creation. Now, think about this. God was made, or God has made man, I should say, in God's image. And God is himself said to see. That word see is used a lot there. Not just to physically see, but also to know and to perceive. That the pleasure of seeing is something that God possesses and he's given to us. In the record of God creating the world, in Genesis chapter 1, many times we read the phrase that God saw that it was good. At the end of the week, after everything was made, in Genesis 1:31, it says, "Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed, it was very good." It was good. All of us can appreciate the ability to see, to take in, to observe our environment. The mountains should start to erupt with color as spring arrives here shortly. Soon we'll see plants spring out of the ground in various colors and forms. At some point we'll then be moving on and we'll be looking for signs of summer and then fall. Then, I hate to break it to you, winter will come again, right? So we'll see those things. There's just so much beauty to behold in the world in which we live, to see our loved ones. Right, to watch our children and then grandchildren grow and mature, to see the fruits of our labors, to see a job well done, to see a clean house, a garden without weeds. There's just so much to flood its way into our life through the eyes. Right there, and to think about the eye itself once too. Just think about that element of creation. What an amazing creation that is. The eye, automatic aiming, automatic focus, automatic aperture adjustment. The eye can function from deep darkness to bright light. It can see the object, the diameter of a fine hair. On average, they say the average eye makes about 100,000 movements in an average day. Right? And all of that performed usually without complaint, unless we get something in there, something bad goes wrong. And then while we sleep, it does its own maintenance work. Right? And what a blessing it is. What a blessing it is that God made us like he is and be able to see. But as we've noted many times in the past, all the good that God has made can and often is used by us for evil. And the eye is certainly no exception to that truth. The temptations to sin associated with the eye are so very, very numerous. Going back to Genesis again, back in Genesis, sometime after God saw that all that he made and he saw that it was very good, Eve, his creation, she looked at God's creation too. And she agreed with that assessment. But the problem was, is she was looking at something that was forbidden from her. It says in Genesis 3, verse 6, it says, "So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eye and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave it to her husband with her, and he ate." So the tree of the knowledge of good and evil looked good to Eve. And that only makes sense to me, and that's because I think the fruit on all the trees looks good, right? I mean, we know that fruit is going to taste good. It's going to appeal to the flesh. And so when our eye sees it, right, it likes what it sees. Ages ago, I mowed a lawn for a couple of seasons for an elderly lady, and she had trees all over this lawn. But there was one tree that typically it was really uglier than the rest of the trees for most of the season, but at the right time of the year, right, it became full of sun-kissed ripe peaches. Right? Oh, I love that. Drive the tractor under there every couple rounds and grab a peach, right? It tastes good, satisfying. It's a pleasure that God has blessed us with. And so I love to gaze upon that peach tree's fruit. Adam and Eve were allowed to eat of the fruit of all of those other trees. And based on God and his goodness and the fruit, think about the fruit that we have on this side of the curse. I'd like to know what the fruit tasted like on the other side of the curse. I bet it was even tastier, right? I would have to assume that all of those various trees had some tasty fruit on them. And so, why wouldn't the forbidden tree's fruit also be a tasty treat? Not to mention, it also had that added kick of what else might be in store for the potential eater of that tree. But the fact that it was forbidden, should have kept Eve from even looking at it. Because when we keep looking, that's when we start to feed the lust, the desires of the eyes. You know how this works. You go down to Martin's. I can't remember the aisle number right now, but it's the one that says candy above it, right? You go down to the candy aisle at Martin's in the grocery store after service is here, and you know you're just going to look around, right? What happens the longer you look around? The more stuff goes in the cart, right? You know how that works, right? And but then, so you end up, you give in, and you end up getting more sweets than you need to eat. But when you give in and you get home and then you eat all those sweets, over the next few days, the scales goes up, and that's what happens then? You get a real eye-opener, right? You get a real eye-opener. Well, that kind of thing happened on a whole different level in Genesis chapter 3. Again, so when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and it was pleasant to the eyes, the tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. She also gave it to her husband with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. And from there, they hid from God. The eyes are the lamp of the body. Much of this world's stimuli for our body, our lusts of the flesh, are first observed by the eye. They're first taken in by the eye, and if we keep looking at those things long enough, we can easily cave to temptations. And time again, eventually, what we'll really see is the damage done by feeding the lusts of the eye. Adam and Eve's eyes were open, and now they saw the world in a whole new way, a way in which things were not so innocent and pure anymore. Now, moving on from here, I want us to think about some big temptations that come with that we can come to us, that we can see. The first one is just materialism in general. All the stuff out there that we can see. And we like to see, right? And we want to possess what we see. The temptation comes when we become too focused on those things. We get our eyes off of God and godly things, off of spiritual matters, and we become solely focused on those material things. Now, there's nothing wrong with material things in general, obviously. There's nothing wrong with having nice things. There's nothing wrong with having new things or more things. God blesses us with all kinds of material things. But we must always be on guard, making sure that those things are not the main things. For example, back in Genesis chapter 13, you got Abraham and his nephew Lot. They're living in the same region together, and both of them are said to be, they're both said to be righteous men. The Bible tells us point blank they're righteous men in the Bible, and God has blessed them both with tremendous material wealth. Not a problem. But they are so blessed that they need to split up in order to have enough pastures for their flocks and their servants. And so Abraham takes the initiative, and he tells Lot, you take your pick of the region where you want to go, travel towards. Wherever you go, Lot, I'll go the other way. And we read in Genesis 13, starting in verse 10, and Lot lifted up his eyes, right? Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. And there was a side note, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go towards Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent as far as Sodom. But the men of Sodom were exceedingly wicked and sinful against the Lord. Simple question, what did Lot see when he looked across the region? It's very simple. There's a lot more grass that way, right? And I got cows and cat and herds and flocks and all that kind of stuff, right? And so it looks good. It's simple enough. But since he's only thinking in material terms, he chooses to move in a direction towards people who were world-renowned for their wickedness. Today, how many Christians today choose their place of employment solely on how well they'll be compensated materially? We understand why they do it. Well, that place is going to pay me a whole lot more. Why wouldn't I go there, right? The thing is, instead we should be looking at the potential dangers everywhere we go that employment could have in store for us spiritually. The lure of a prosperous life caught the eyes of Lot as well as blinding him to the dangers of Sodom. Again, I would have never considered Lot a righteous man if the New Testament didn't tell me that he was. And why is that? Well, because for starters, materialism seems to be his guide. But if you think about it, right, if you get real honest with yourself, many Christians today, good people, right, they get themselves into all kinds of trouble because of this world's goods. Now, Lot was eventually spared from being destroyed himself. He lost a wife, multiple other daughters, along with their fiancés, and the two daughters that were left, we could tell Sodom had a bad effect on them, right? He lost a lot. And today, we're warned that there's no guarantee of that for any salvation for us. The warning here in 1 Timothy 6 says, "Now godliness with contentment is great gain, for we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing with these, we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." There's all kinds of material things in this world that look good to us. And there's nothing wrong with having many of those things. But when we allow the temptation for those things to be our primary focus at the cost of spiritual things, when all we can see is having those things, we are headed for trouble. Next, the eyes are a major player when it comes to sexual immorality. For example, in 2 Peter, Peter's describing false teachers there. And they come along. And one of the things he mentions about them, he says they have eyes full of adultery. That's how he describes them. Eyes full of adultery. They can't stop looking at the opposite sex and intent on sex. Jesus addresses this in Matthew 5 in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out, cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. For it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. Being people who satisfy the flesh, right? We know what feels good. And having seen what feels good, we can be tempted to keep looking at it, right? The problem with that comes is that when what we're looking at is forbidden. Just like Eve looking at that fruit, we do the same thing when it comes to looking at other people. We can look around and know what we like to look at. Men know what kind of shape they like on a woman. They know what kind of hair, what kind of clothes, how tall, how short, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And women are just the same. They know what they like to see in a man. That's just how it works. It's the way we're wired. And there's nothing wrong, again, with seeing or observing these things, right? Just walking around, we're going to observe all kinds of people. The problem comes when we start to focus in, when we keep those eyes dialed in. And this particular aspect of the lust of the eyes is very dangerous because of our ability to engage in it while remaining completely undetected, right? We can feed the lust in many ways, and those around us have no clue. But if we keep doing that, then eventually we'll end up acting upon that also. Just ask King David how that's going to work out. 2 Samuel 11, verses 1 and 4. It says, "It happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. Then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked on the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. So David sent and inquired about the woman, and someone said, 'Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?' And David sent messengers and took her. And she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity, and she returned to her house." So we just read that David committed adultery with Bathsheba. But what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, he committed adultery with her in his heart long before she ever made it to his bed. When it says that he saw her here in verse 2, this wasn't just a passing glance. Oh, wow, there's a naked lady. That was far more than that. He kept looking. kept perceiving, thinking about it, feeding the lust of the eyes until he acted upon it. Had he stopped right away, man, can you imagine how many times he probably thought, man, if I would have just stopped looking right away. If he'd stopped looking right away, we wouldn't have fed the lust of the eyes. It's safe to say that things would have turned out much different, quite differently. Like Jesus says, we've got to cut it off. Cut off that temptation at its starting point. We've got to do whatever it takes because, like Jesus says, you don't want to wind up in hell. Moving on. Third, there is the temptation to not see things as they really are. There's the temptation to stay blind to our true condition. The temptation to blindly follow some false teaching, the temptation to not really examine the realities of life. The lust of the eyes can actually keep us from seeing. It's fascinating to think about. Some examples. Well, there's all kinds of people who just absolutely ignore the evidence for creation, for an early earth, any of that kind of stuff. There are all kinds of people out there who read the Bible, yet they will not see that they have been baptized in order to be saved, things like that, let alone what it's required for them to stay faithful, to stay saved. It's there. It's there in black and white, and they don't see it. Why is that? Well, it's because of the lust of their eyes. Because of that lust, they only see what they want to see. They don't want to change their ways. They don't want the truth, and so they've trained their eyes to only feed their wants. Now, the eyes aren't mentioned here, but reading in 2 Timothy 4, they're tied together. It says, preach the word, be ready in season and out of season, convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. But according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. But you be watchful in all things, endure affliction, do the work of an evangelist, fulfill your ministry. Again, Paul's focus is on the ears, right? And what they hear. But the eyes are involved too here. Because you can literally open the book, have them read the passage. They see it there in black and white. And they will look at you in the face and they'll tell you, I don't see it that way, the way that you do. Or we see things different. People will do this in matters of religion, but they'll do it in many other ways too. I mean, just think about how the devil has pulled the wool over man's eyes today. Think about the redefinition of terms. This is one of the big areas that happens. Redefinition of terms in order to get us to see things in a totally different way and see things as not so bad. Okay, what does it mean to terminate a pregnancy? What does it mean to talk about women's health care options? What does it mean when people talk about planned parenthood? Those are all references to murder. Those are references to murder is what they are, right? Yet an amazing amount of people don't see that as murder. Why is that? Well, they've allowed themselves to be blinded to the reality. A large part of this happens by redefining terms. What's really meant by the word affair, right? Or extramarital sex? What's being spoken about when somebody talks about their partner? Most of the time, people are referring to sexual immorality, sin of some kind. Homosexuality is an alternative lifestyle. Transgender behavior is gender identification. Theft is social maladjustment, right? The lazy are underprivileged. The irreligious are open-minded and tolerant. Well, the Bible talks about those types of things and uses the eyes to do so. 2 Corinthians 4. But even if our gospel is veiled, it's veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. John 12, Jesus says, therefore they could not believe, because Isaiah said again, he has blinded their eyes, hardened their hearts, lest they should see with their eyes, lest they should understand with their hearts in turn, so that I should heal them. Paul, being spoken to in Acts 26, it says, I will deliver you from the Jewish people, as well as from the Gentiles, to whom I now send you to do what? To open their eyes in order to turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who are sanctified by faith in me. God has blessed us with sight, but with it comes temptations. The temptation to focus on only the material world, the temptation to look upon others for sexual gratification, and the temptation to see things only the way we want to see them. But in closing today, moving on again, in order to overcome the lust of the eyes, it's important that we think about the directions provided from God's word. There's something we need to train ourselves to see when the temptations hit. 1 Corinthians talks about, 1 Corinthians 10, 12, and 13. It says, therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Then it says, there's no temptations overtaken you, except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. We can live confidently, knowing that every temptation involving the lust of the eyes can be overcome. There is a way of escape. We just need to look for it. We need to use our eyes to see the way out. In the book of Job, in Job 31, Job talks about how he made a covenant with his eyes. We too should make a covenant with our eyes. Making a covenant with our eyes sets a goal. It gives us a mantra to repeat in those times of temptation. And our focus then, our sight remains on Christ and heavenly things. And then we'll determine to see the one thing of the greatest importance, to see God and his righteousness seen in our life. With that said, do you want to see heaven, right? Ultimately, that's what we all want to see in the end. Well, we need to make sure we don't give in to the temptations of the lust of the eye along the way in order to get there. If you've been forgiven of your sins in baptism, but you realize that you've allowed this temptation to take over your life, change it. Make a commitment. Make a covenant with your eyes today to change that. Lord will forgive you. If you've not been baptized for the forgiveness of sins and you want to see heaven, you want to see this whole world in a whole new light, knowing you have an anchor for the soul there, you can respond to the gospel, the good news, by responding by coming to the front as we stand and sing.